Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Netflix have just announced that they've acquired the release of the highly anticipated sequel of the classic horror movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Meanwhile, another horror, Candyman, is topping box offices globally. So it's got us thinking, why in the name of God do people pay hard-earned cash to be scared out of their minds? Well, Dr. Declan McKenna is senior lecturer in the Biomedical Sciences Research Institute at Ulster University. And he's with me now. Dr. McKenna, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Cormac. Thanks for having me on.
I hope you have the answer to the question we posed there, because most people, don't they, go to the cinema to be entertained and not necessarily be scared or to be frightened. What exactly attracts an awful lot of people to horror movies?
Well, it's interesting you should use the word entertained there, because entertainment, whatever way we get it in, is really more about sensation seeking, you know, whether we want to feel happy or sad or thrilled. And really, as a species, we're sensation seekers and thrill seekers. And so for the same reason that we would go on roller coasters or bungee jumping or whatever floats your boat, people like to watch horror movies because it really triggers those sort of those stress reactions and those pathways in our brain that makes us flood our bodies with hormones like neurotransmitters like dopamine and hormones like adrenaline. And a lot of us evidently like the feel of those chemicals as they go through our body. But the key thing about horror films is that our rational side of our brain is telling us that we're safe because we're sitting on our sofa or in a cinema watching the film. So we get to feel unsafe from a position of safety.
And is it people then, can I extrapolate and say, is it people who have a good life, a nice secure existence, who like to pretend to feel unsafe, who go and see horror movies?
There certainly would be an element of escapism for this, you know, and so a lot of people turn to horror films during lockdown to essentially forget about the stresses of the real world and watch somebody else's stresses instead. And there would be a connection, I guess, between that idea of saying, well, look, I'm happy and secure, you know, doing my own job or my own life or whatever, and I just want to watch something else which is going to trigger some of those feelings of danger, but without actually putting yourself in danger. And so that's that idea of sensation seeking. And we find that in lots of different ways, you know, and for a lot of people, horror films are one of the things that we can access.
Ticks the box. Which is strange, Declan, in a way, because there was an awful lot of fear over the past year globally with COVID, but still, horror films, they were streaming like good on various platforms.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the really interesting things about the horror genre is that it really, the best horror movies hold up a mirror to society and reflect back at you what's happening. And the ones that really stick in people's minds are the ones that are not just scaring you and able to generate some frights, but actually exercise your brain a little bit as well, you know. And just to give an example of that, I mean, one of the most successful films during lockdown was a little film called Host, which was made by a group of actors during lockdown, and the entire film is based on a Zoom call, and it's just a laptop screen where people are coming in and out.
That is a horror.
Yeah, and you know, 2 years ago you might have heard that concept and thought, my God, how could that be scary? But actually, in the throes of a pandemic and a lockdown, people watched it, empathised with the characters, and all of a sudden quite often they were watching it on a laptop, which only heightened the realism of it, and it became something that people empathised with a lot more, and that the best horror films will make you empathise with the characters, even if the narrative is fantastical or featuring monsters or aliens or whatever it is.
Yeah, and some people were on Zoom calls and they thought it was a horror film.
Come
here. I wonder what makes it really frightening. I mean, well, let's have a listen, actually, because we know that the music is key, isn't it, in terms of creating the atmosphere, the fear around the scene. Let's have a listen to one of the most famous scenes in a horror movie of all time. There you go, Declan.
Yeah.
The shower scene from Psycho. And it's quite simple music, really, isn't it?
Well, it's simple in as much as that's what's being played, but the effect on the human ear and the human reaction to it is really complicated. And it really, you know, music and soundtracks in horror films are much more complicated and nuanced than just a loud bang to make you jump.
Yeah.
Really, in the case of soundtracks, it's about the best soundtracks that affect people are the ones that amplify and mimic sounds that we in nature and in real life find distressing. So a couple of studies have looked at this and found that if noises mimic or sound like screams or screeches or distressed animals, then we as humans have evolved to find that quite distressing.
Yeah,
and as a
really?
Result, we will be distressed within a movie when we hear it. And Psycho is a very good example, because those violins were deliberately played at the right at the edge of their sort of capability. The screeching, sort of scraping noise of it mimicked a human scream. And when people watch the film, they're still quite shocked by that shower scene, even 60 years later.
Yeah, which
but you never actually see the girl in the film being stabbed, ever. It's all shot and suggested by both the photography and by the sound of the music.
And I think, actually, now that you say that, I think I've read a study sometime where people felt they had seen it because it was so graphic. But based on what you say, that it mimics screeches and screams and so on, how do you explain this one? This is another really famous horror movie, and to all intents and purposes, if you mute it, it's a funny looking plastic shark in the sea. But when you add this music, it's something else. Decky, get out of the water.
Absolutely. I presented some a presentation on this some time ago and just got the audience to see could they hum along this theme of Jaws, you know, there and then, and everybody could do it in total unison. It's a theme that has just entered into our consciousness. And again, the music, those deep bass rumbles, you know, are part of that as well, you know, and the juxtaposition between the spike of the music and up and down, mm-hmm. and the speed and the tempo, and all of that builds together with what you're seeing on screen in order to sort of discombobulate you. And if there's any, I mean, people who are musicians will know that discordant notes will immediately put your teeth on edge a little bit, and that's what filmmakers will use effectively to really stress you out and make you think, well, your brain is going, well, there's something not quite right about what I'm hearing or what I'm seeing here.
Yeah.
And all of that disorientates you and makes you a bit uneasy then.
And there are the musical tricks that horror films use. Let's give one more example then, because somebody said to me, this music, it's light and breezy, and yet it's from one of the scariest horror films of all time, The Exorcist. God, you'd almost play that for a child, wouldn't you, Declan?
Yeah, I mean, again, that idea of using instruments, you know, that are not typical in music, and maybe people were more used to an orchestral score in the movies, and come into the 60s and 70s, they started to experiment a little more with what would make a soundtrack. And so those tubular bells from Mike Oldfield really were something a bit different that people hadn't heard before. And that idea of using then musical instruments that might be more childlike, like xylophone or even nursery rhymes repeated over and over in horror films are quite a good trope now. It's that idea of putting something innocent or childlike against some very dark material, and that is part of the effect again of making you think, well, I'm a bit uneasy about this now because it's not quite right.
Come here to me. Do you have a favourite before I let you go? A favourite horror movie?
Well, I suppose I'm a wee bit old school in that I would like the likes of Psycho and The Haunting and those old black and white films. But I must say, the last decade we've been pretty spoiled for horror films that have really challenged the conventions of the genre. They really are those films that will be happily scare you, happily make you jump out of your seat, but will actually you know, make you think a little bit. And we've had stuff like Get Out, about racism, The Babadook, about depression, Relic, which is about Alzheimer's disease, and my personal favourite, Train to Busan, which is actually a South Korean film, a zombie film on a train,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually about globalisation and fear of barriers, fear of borders and fear of immigration. So sure, there's lots of zombies on a train, and if you like that sort of stuff, that works.
Yeah,
but there's also
yeah.
a really satirical subtext, which makes the brain work as well.
You know, I haven't seen it, but that movie about the Zoom meeting, I'd say, is my favourite horror film of all time.
And it's nice and short. It's only around 60 minutes. You can watch it quite quickly, and you'll be surprised how much it sticks in your mind.
Well, not the ones that I've been on. Not the ones that... Look, Dr. Declan McKenna, Senior Lecturer in the Biomedical Sciences Research Institute at Ulster University. A real pleasure, and not a horror at all, to talk to you about horror movies. Thank you very much indeed.